It's been very frustrating to watch it glacially progress. But as I've been reminded quite often, if we step away from the screens and stop looking at the stock prices, you can make the argument that the pace of progression is remarkable over the last 5 or 6 years.
This is The Dime. Dive into the cannabis and hemp industry through trends, insights, predictions, and tangents.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of The Dime. I'm Brian Fields. With me, as always, is Kellen Finney. And this week, we've got a very special guest, Todd Harrison. Todd, thanks for taking the time. How are you doing today?
Yep. Thanks for having me, guys.
Excited to dive in. Kellen, how are you doing?
Doing really well. Really excited to talk to Todd. Grateful he's given us some time while the markets are still open. So I'm excited. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing really excited. Yeah, maybe we can get a live reaction from Todd today on something that hits. I'm only hoping that some good news comes. But I think, Todd, before we dive in, I think it'd be great for our listeners, maybe unfamiliar about you. Can you give a little background about yourself and more specifically how you kind of got focused on the cannabis space?
Sure. So traditional finance background, Morgan Stanley out of college and, followed that pathway. When I was 31, I was president of Cramer Berkowitz down on Wall Street. You know, planes hit the towers that day. Unbeknownst to me, that really started my journey into cannabis because it helped me solve for PTSD that I didn't know that I had or wasn't aware was a thing for some time. But, you know, studying the science, studying the history, studying the commercial applications and really the economic opportunities, the criminal justice history, all of it. It's just been a fascinating journey for the last, 15 years now. So we started CB1 Capital 2017, or launched, I should say, the fund in 2017. It's a long, short fund. We have an advisory shingle. We work with companies and with funds in the space to help them get up to speed on the space and help them solve for some of the many myriad of problems that that exist over the course of business in this industry. And then we have an advocacy side. We work pretty closely with Walden Angelus and Mission Green to help effect positive change at the federal level, get people out of prison for the plant, and try to do good while doing well, all of which are intentions at this point, because it's been a hell of a journey for the last 5 years.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I think one of those journeys, which I've been fascinated to follow, is kind of the way you've communicated the growth of these companies, and maybe the markets haven't reflected that from some of their movement. But I want to understand more specifically, is it hard to remember when we recognize how early we still are? And then do you think sometimes people lose track of kind of where this industry can be, let's say 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think I was on Yahoo Finance over 10 years ago now, talking about how this was my single best idea for the next decade. And of course, it was a little early, as is typical for those who know me. But I think anybody who's really developed a passion about this plant has done so from a personal perspective, right? They've been touched by it. It's helped solve for a condition or something, an indication that they can't solve for through traditional Western medicine. And I think there's an efficacious agility without getting too deep into sort of the science, but this is, you know, more than one thing for one person. And I think that's why people who have experienced that are passionate about it. For me, it was PTSD. For my partner, it was seizure disorder. We've seen it work for a number of different occasions, but as with everything, we're very early. So I remember when I went on Yahoo over 10 years ago and said, this is my best idea for the next decade, they snickered, they laughed. At the time, I think there was, you know, a handful of penny stocks and GW Pharma, which has since been taken out. And it's still very early because we were talking back then about how the demographics would shift and how the opposition is aging out and how this was coming through the state level as very much laboratories of democracy, if you will. And all of that's now progressed. But even still, here we are, 2024. I think it's a misunderstood, a dynamic for a lot of people. I think the intricacies of the federal and state level chasms are misunderstood by many. And I think the ramifications, or I think you could argue the intentions of this war on drugs, you know, continues apace. So it's been very frustrating to watch it glacially progress. But as I've been reminded quite often, if we step away from the screens and stop looking at the stock prices, you can make the argument that the pace of progression is remarkable over the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. And I mean, I think so. Colorado's had like a recreational cannabis industry now for like 10, almost 10 years, right? And so it's hard for a lot of people to think that we're still super early on, but we are, because you look at a lot of the East Coast markets and they're still coming online. And so do you think that that difference between like a West Coast and East Coast market maturity perspective is why you still see such massive fluctuations in a lot of these MSO prices?
Well, I think that the fluctuations in the prices have as much to do with the mechanism or the structural deficiencies, right? You can't custody the underlying stocks. It's one, I've been doing this 35 years almost, and to watch an ETF trade on the New York Stock Exchange where there's no market in the underlying securities except for the market makers who are trying to hedge, like, it's not how things are supposed to work. We need custody. We need those pipes, that plumbing, before there can be liquidity. Until then, MSOS is really the only pipe in town, and it's the dog with 28 cannabis tails, for lack of a better analogy. Until such time that companies can be bought by institutional investors, that's going to be a lot stickier than the current composition of volume. But to get back to your question about the dichotomy between states, I really think the evolution is the function of education. It's a function of demographics. We see how the younger generation is embracing this, and now the older generation, paradoxically, they're the highest uptake rates, because as you get older and your endocannabinoid system or biological endocannabinoid system start to fade in certain regards, the cannabinoids found in cannabis is like it supplements our body's natural processes. But I think we're still at the front end of understanding exactly what the cannabinoids are for different conditions. People, I think, have just been consuming cannabis, and sort of what they get is I like how that feels, so I'm gonna do it more. But I think to be able to take that spaghetti off the wall and actually look at the strands and see what the minor cannabinoids are and see what the efficacious agility is for different trials, different indications, that's all in front of us, right? Because we haven't been able to study the plant except overseas in certain places. So it's by design, right? If you go back and you study the history, it'll piss you off, because I grew up thinking propaganda was a Russian thing. And I came to realize that it hasn't cornered the market on propaganda. Our country's done a lot of things that we shouldn't be proud of. It, in a lot of ways, is exciting to be around as we start to unwind that, these are historic times, right? Like last week at the White House with Kamala Harris and Joe Biden at the State of the Union, I think it's pretty clear that they see the political winds and they want to latch onto this for 2.0 to the extent they can.
So kind of taking back a holistic approach, looking back from 2016, then saying we are today, these combinations of momentums, potential catalysts with the White House, the VP, and the president coming out making these statements, with the election coming up and Schedule 3 on the docket, is this the type of momentum that eventually you think will help push us over the finish line in one? I'm not going to ask you to go on the record to make any predictions, but just momentum standpoint.
It's a cumulative effect, I think. For those who were really upset that we didn't see anything at the end of last year, for those of us who, were really at the front lines of trying to get safe over the finish line in 2021 and how close we were, like, people don't realize. And then, what that spoke to when it didn't pass, right? How disorganized the industry is, and how there were so many different disparate asks and so many different, not just from the industry, but from all around the table, right? Like, because, you talk about sort of, you take a step back and you say, why is this so complicated? Well, there's a lot of groups, a lot of people who have a legitimate claim to sort of having that seat at the table, from, starting with the disadvantaged and the people that have been weaponized or been a victim of the weaponization of this plant. And that is not up to debate at this point, right? This has been on the record. If you go back and you look at Nixon and the tapes, it's all there. Right. But it's not just, I think that, the lines of distinction between criminal justice and social justice, they've all blurred. Right. I mean, I personally, and just don't shoot the messenger, I think nobody should be in prison for a plant, but I don't necessarily think those same people should be at the front of the line either. I don't think you can legislate both. I think the MSOs, a lot of these entrepreneurs and pioneers, have done remarkable jobs in the most onerous of conditions and done it better than anybody else. And they're barely keeping their nose above water because of the 75% effective tax rate and all of the different conditions and restrictions that they're forced to face. The legacy growth, right? You could go around the table, right? And so we've made sort of the observation through the years that, if everybody's pulling on the baby, they're going to rip the baby apart. Like, you need to work together. Right. Let's find common goals, common enemies, even. Right. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Right. So, like, I don't necessarily think, for instance, that the legacy markets in New York and the MSOs in New York need to be on the opposite side of the table. I think they could look at each other and say, hey, our common enemy is the illicit market that's taking food out of both our mouths. Let's figure out how to sort of work together. If you have better price structures and we have better distribution, there's something there. Same thing with hemp and cannabis, right? I think for a long time, we've had this hug it or hate it sort of mindset among the operators with legal hemp and the loophole in the farm bill. And a lot of that's going to close, but there is going to be a survivor. We think it's, you know, low dose hemp beverages. And we think that is not a competition for cannabis. We think that is a funnel for the cannabis consumer. It's a competition for alcohol, as the data is proving. I haven't had a drink in months. And before that, it was months because, you know, I drink my tempters. It's 5 calories. It's delicious. And I don't need the alcohol. I don't need the depressant. And I enjoy the how I feel on cannabinoids. So I think all of that's in front of us. But, you know, it comes in waves and cycles. And so it will continue as we start to get more news, we hope, out of Washington.
What do you think most people, let's say general people, just miss about the opportunity of cannabis? Do you think it's the stigma kind of built up over time? It's that propaganda that's kind of been solidified inside their mind? Or do you think it's more people, most people assume that the cannabis today is too potent and it kind of reminds them of their college days where they had, let's say, a bad brownie experience?
Well, I think you can look at that question two ways. You could say, what are people missing in terms of the secular opportunity? And then you could say, what did people miss in terms of coming into the market early, like myself? Like, you know, I've got war wounds and, you know, and all sorts of, you know, damaged, you know, mindsets over the years because things have taken much longer than expected. You saw sort of the pendulum swing from one side to the other, as it typically does. And the structural impediments that were in place, again, not by accident, to choke off the oxygen, i.e. capital, to the space so that other industries aren't at disadvantage. And you think of alcohol with their three-tiered system. They're like, cannabis shouldn't have banking. You know, they've got to pick a lane, right? So all of that stuff is still being sorted through, we think. We'll get Schedule 3. That's what's been messaged, we think. That's a sweet spot for current operators, at least for a period of time. And we think that you're going to see a shitload of capital raises, and which is, again, probably a good thing because you can't say capital markets are closed and the balance sheets are doomed and then argue that when the capital markets open, that's a bad thing too. But there'll be a lot of consolidation. There's going to be a lot of movement coming out of this. But I think what you're going to see really as we emerge from Schedule 3, and we do think we're going to get safer banking in the Garland memo as the other two components there into the election. And then we think you're going to see 2.0, their plank for their next administration, you know, is we're going to go all the way. We're going to deschedule it and we're going to get everybody out of jail. And, you know, whether there's the political will for that, I don't know. But that seems to be, you know, what they've been saying in the last couple of weeks. And it's hard pressed to see them kind of say that where they, you know, basically appointed Merrick Garland and he's the guy there. And you have an HHS recommendation that's binding on the medical side. You have an OLC opinion reportedly, you know, which is binding on the treaty side. So, you know, the timing becomes, what do we see? And then you're going to see sort of the rush, right? And you'll see a lot of capital raised, you'll see expansion, you'll see consolidation, and then you're going to see prices again, like lower, normalize lower. And I think that's the only way you're going to ultimately eat into the illicit market share is through price. And that's going to create a whole new round of, you know, concerns and worries for the industry. But that's on the other side, I think, of a pretty good exhalation after 3 years of trying to hold your breath.
One question I always had about rescheduling was, okay, it becomes Schedule 3. Does that also open the door for companies like Walgreens, CVS, other pharmacies now to then jump in and kind of force like a dispensary to kind of go through your standard licensing process to distribute a pharmaceutical? Like you would need a state pharmaceutical license. Is that something that comes into play with rescheduling?
Yeah, nobody knows, but that's presumably what the Garland memo is going to help elucidate, how it all fits together. You need the Justice Department to basically lay down the rules. What we've heard, we don't know this, but what we've heard is that it's going to look very much like the Cole memo, but with specific language around banks or financial institutions. We don't know which one. But it's, again, it's not a law. It's not as powerful as a law. But if you get that in conjunction with Schedule 3 and safe banking, which is what we believe their intention is, it's going to create a pretty good marketplace for state legal operators to exist. And we think they're going to be insulated for the time being, which, again, is a seam that not many people knew was going to happen. We didn't know, and we still don't know what's going to happen. But if this is the way it comes out, and we think the motivation here for Schedule 3, and really, aside from the fact that the government just released 252 pages of a confession that said that this is better for you than alcohol and other scheduled substances, we think a lot of the motivation is around these state-level social justice programs that could never get out of the gate because they couldn't get bank accounts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which is what we've been telling them for the last 4 years. And they, you know, Cory Booker laid himself down and the rest is history. So, you know, cost us a lot, you know, probably 4 or 5% of a risk-free rate for starters. And a lot of people aren't around that were around, but, you know, these things take time. So hopefully that time is between now and November.
What's your perspective on the limited licenses and the regulatory capture that some of these MSOs have? I know that cannabis Twitter is up in arms in certain directions on some benefits, but others. But I'm curious to know your perspective. Do you think it's good? Do you think there should be some sort of middle ground? How do you see that laying out?
I think it is what it is. I think you've got a legitimate argument about the Dormer Commerce Clause, right? I mean, that's always been out there. And I get that in terms of if you're a West Coast producer in particular. It's not really up by... I could love it or hate it. It is what it is, right? Like, this is the only way you're going to have a, you know, U.S. cannabis industry right now is from the inside out. So, you know, that is what we have. And the only way you can build a brand, I mean, I remember I took a, you know, what was this, 2 months ago, I took a big investor, guy who launched a big, big book, and he wanted to learn more about cannabis. I took him to the ATB conference, and he couldn't wrap his head around the idea of all these different supply chains in every different state. And I said, well, that's, because he would say to them, are you a farmer, or are you a manufacturer, or are you a retailer? And they'd be like, yes. Like, well, how do you do all that? Like, that's what the market is. That's what we have to do if we want to have a national, you know, footprint. So I do think that ultimately you'll see the consolidation, and you'll see if they have to pick a lane, there'll be an opportunity to cure and presumably a much more fluid market. But, you know, I don't think it's a natural, like, you know, as a lot of people on the West Coast will tell you, I don't think it's a natural dynamic for you to grow flower in a city, right? Like, you don't grow tomatoes in a city, right? It's eating up a lot of the grid. It's not normal. But I think ultimately, when the dust kind of settles, you'll have a hybrid, you'll have different strokes for different folks, you're going to have like a regional manufacturing, you're going to have craft, you're going to have high end, it's like anything else, right? You're going to have that 1% that walks into a dispensary and sorts by the most expensive, because they're the fucking assholes that do that, right? And you're going to have people that still go into the dispensary and ask for the highest THC, because they would normally walk into a bar and say, give me your highest proof. That doesn't happen. But this is all part of the sort of educational consumer curve. And again, you know, we sort of look at it and say, cannabinoids as a health and wellness substance, as opposed to a vice, I think will be the biggest sort of shift in perception over the next few years.
Let's quickly switch gears. And I want you to tell me the first word that comes to mind.
Okay.
TerrAscend.
JW. Yeah. Is that a word? Yeah. We're JW fans. We're not worried about what they're doing there. We're actually very excited about what they're doing there.
Verano.
Yeah. Another good operator. Another close relationship. And I will tell you, as you just, I know this is not one word, but when it comes to getting cannabis that I actually want to enjoy, I take the trip across the river and I go to TerrAscend, I go to Verano, you know, I'll go to Green Thumb too, but you know, they don't have that in New York right now. And, you know, as a consumer, I can tell you that I make the trip because I enjoy the product.
Come on, Ben, let's get in New York. Sam.
Is that, Sam, as in the, you know, the fuckers who are trying to, I blocked them a long time ago. I they're on the wrong side of history. And I think I saw Jason Wild post that they are funded by Insys Pharmaceuticals, or were funded. I don't know if that's true, but I saw it on Twitter, so it must be true. But yeah, those guys are all in jail. So.
The Boys lawsuit.
Yeah, I want to get high with David Boies one day. I think it's another shot on goal across another branch of the government. So I think it's timely.
Removal of 280E.
I mean, what do you say about that? Yahtzee? I actually hope Boies goes after the past payments too, and you grandfather it, because it's probably worth more than the market caps of some of these things right now.
True Leaf.
Appreciative of what Kim's doing in Florida. I guess if we don't hear in the next 10 days, it's going to be on the ballot. So we'll see.
Investing in cannabis is?
Not for people who want balance in their life and the smiles on their face all the time, but hopefully something that's going to help future generations get to where they need to go.
Under the radar state you think most are missing?
Texas.
Tell me something which is true that almost nobody agrees with you on.
Wow. I pass. I'll come back to that one.
One product you can't live without.
Cannabis.
What question do you wish more people asked you?
Would you like some cannabis?
What is the most expensive lesson you've ever learned?
I think I'm still learning it, but I'll let you know how that works out.
Dream smoking session, three people dead or alive.
Well, it's definitely smoking. It's not drinking. So I would say Benjamin Franklin, Snoop Dogg, and my grandfather when he was 23.
If you could put anything on a billboard, metaphorically speaking, to get a message to billions of people, it could be an image, a quote, or a word, or something that inspired you. What's the first thing that comes to mind?
All you have is your name and your word.
When you started your journey in the cannabis space, what did you get right? And most importantly, what did you get wrong?
I think I got right the direction and the adoption and the opportunity. I think I got wrong the timing.
All right. Prediction time. Todd, with all the potential cannabis upon the horizon and the proliferation of the hemp industry in states like Texas, is federal legalization even necessary? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Yes, it is necessary to get people out of prison. It's still criminalized. I don't have visibility on when that will happen. I think Schedule 3 is a stepping stone, but I don't know when we finish that journey.
Kellen, you want to take a swing?
I agree with Todd. I think that it does need to be legalized, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime. Maybe in 5 years, right? Especially with the timeline Todd laid out, right? What do you think, Brian?
I think the merging of the two industries eventually will have to take place. I think what we've seen go on in certain industries like, markets like Texas has definitely been a loophole that most don't want to think about. But I think it's a big opportunity for, let's say, the regulators to get it all right and everyone in line, because eventually we're going to have to line things up where we all play on the same playing field. So Todd, for our listeners, they want to get in touch, they want to read some of the work, where can they find you?
Well, I would say Substack, but I'm told that they're taking down Substack cannabis content now. So I guess Twitter or Todd at cb1cap.com.
Oh, I didn't know that. All right. Well, thanks for taking the time. This was a lot of fun. We'll link it up in the show notes.
Yep. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Guys, if you've enjoyed this podcast over the last few years, can you please take 3 minutes or less and leave us a quick review on Apple or Spotify? All reviews make a massive difference for us and help other people like you find this podcast. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, my name's Kate, and I'm your host of the Pot Moms Podcast. I started the Pot Moms Podcast, because I wanted to end the stigma against using cannabis, specifically with moms, but also anyone who chooses to consume. I strive for a balance of humor and education, along with some pretty rad guests, to help combat social biases that come with consuming cannabis. Kids are hard. Join me for regular podcast episodes packed with parenting hacks, real life stories, and of course, my favorite cannabis products. The days are long, but the years are short. So roll another J and take a deep breath. Keep blazing and stay amazing.